translational accuracy, and the King James Version likewise translates hatred. So some passages that use this word, Luke 23:12, Herod and Pilate had enmity with each other in the past. They become friends on the occasion. What occasion? Yeah, the trial of Jesus leading to his crucifixion. Herod is in town for the Passover, and so Pilate, learning where Jesus was from the territory that was controlled by Herod, this would be Herod Antipas, he sends Jesus to Herod. Herod interrogates Jesus, is not really satisfied with anything. He doesn't get any answer much from Jesus. In fact, nothing. But Pilate's action removed the hatred, the enmity with each other. Part of that hatred had to do with the fact that Herod Antipas really wanted to rule all of the territory that his father Herod the Great had ruled, and Pontius Pilate ruled a significant section of that territory. And so they were not big buddies until after this. Romans 8:7, the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. That's the translation of the ESV. It appears there to be an adjective, but it is actually a noun, as we're talking about nouns. And you see that in the New King James Version. The carnal mind is enmity against God. There's a conflict there. There's hatred, hostility between the carnal mind and God. Some other passages, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 14 and 16. For he himself is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility. What was that dividing wall? Yeah, the law of Moses. The law of Moses made a distinction between Jew and Gentile. The law of Moses, as you understand, was given to the Jews. And the law of Moses was designed, at least among other motivations or purposes, it was designed to provide for the holiness of the Jewish people. And so they were to be separate from the other peoples around them. And that created a hostility, but that's broken down at the cross, and might reconcile us both, verse 16 here, to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. The commandments were removed, the law of Moses was removed, no more distinction between Jew and Gentile. You adulterous people, James writes, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God, hostility? Why? Because the world and God's will are diametrically opposed. And so James says, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. All right. So let's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That passage is particularly interesting when you go back to, was it Vine's definition where it said it's the opposite of agape?
Love, yes.
So, you know, you become the opposite of agape toward God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. How many of you would understand hate to be the opposite of love, agape? Yeah, I think that's a reasonable statement. Yeah, I think so. In fact, in the scriptures, love and hate are opposed to each other. And so I think Vine's definition is a good one. Boy, this is all messed up. And I'm sorry about the slides not coming up the right way. Anyway, we're looking at the second word now. It's the word strife. Eris is the Greek word. And bidag, which is a classic lexicon, engagement in rivalry, especially with reference to positions taken in a matter. Strife, discord, contention. Quarrel is one of the words that Vine uses, especially, he says, especially rivalry. You can have a quarrel that's not necessarily a rivalry. But Vine says that the connotation of this world is that there is a competition, a rivalry between two sides. Wrangling, as in the church in Corinth. It's translated contentions in Titus 3:9. The Logos Sense lexicon says bitter conflict. Bitter is a strong word when you're talking about things like this. This is not just in a disagreement. We'll say more about that when we get to the discussion questions. This is not just two people who have different opinions. There's a contention. There's a rivalry here. There's discord here. And Logos indicates that by talking about it as a bitter conflict, heated, often violent dissension. Okay, so strife is again a vivid word. And there are not many different translations of that. The New King James Version uses contentions. The New Living Translation, quarreling. And variance is the King James Version translation, which is not a word we use very much. And it seems kind of vague for the meaning of this word. All right, so Romans 1:29 is Paul writes about Gentile society. He says they were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, and he continues then in verse 30. So there's a passage that uses the same word. Romans 13:13 we've looked at before in the context of sexual immorality and sensuality. Those are the two of the three words that are used in the beginning of the works of the flesh. But here, Paul includes in the third word pair, not in quarreling and jealousy. I don't know if you remember, those of you who were in the class when we talked about this passage, it seems like in the word pairs that the first word is actually the consequence or the effect, whereas the second word seems to be the cause or the motivation for something. He says, not in orgies and drunkenness. Well, drunkenness leads to what we'll talk about here in another lesson, orgies, parties, drunken parties. Not in sexual immorality and sensuality. Sensuality leads to sexual immorality, the word porneia, as we talked about that in the very second lesson. And then finally, jealousy leads to strife or quarreling. One of the things that's a little bit disconcerting about the ESV is that they're not consistent very much, not always consistent about the translation of a word, even when context would not demand a different translation. Let me give you an illustration of that. In the Greek language, there is no word for husband. It's just the word man. And so context will determine whether you're talking about a husband or whether you're just talking about a male, a man. And so translators have to make a distinction based on context in the way that they translate that Greek word, okay? But then there are other words, and I think this is one of them, eros, where context isn't going to change the meaning of the word much, if any. And yet, sometimes it'll be translated strife, as in Galatians 5, and then other times it'll be translated quarreling, like it is here in Romans 13:13. It would be better, if you're kind of evaluating translations, it would be better for translations to be consistent with the translation if context doesn't demand a difference in meaning. Is everybody following me? Okay, so the ESV, if there's a weakness, that probably should be noted. 1 Corinthians 1:11, for it has been reported to me by Chloe's people that there is quarreling among you, my brothers. I guess I should have said one more thing, and that is, I don't think quarreling is a bad translation. It's just that they change the words from one passage to another, even when the Greek word is the same. So be consistent through here. But was there quarreling among the Corinthians?
Yes.
What? Yeah, yes. What evidence is there that they were quarreling with one another?
Factions.
I'm sorry, say again?
Factions.
Okay, factions, even with respect to the Lord's Supper, it seems. Lawsuits, chapter 6. Good, good. Paul says, you're taking your brethren to law and before the unbelievers. So there were some difficulties there, quarreling, and they were trying to resolve that by legal means. Anything else?
Their interactions with each other about spiritual gifts.
Okay, some interactions there in chapter 12 seem to indicate some jealousy, maybe some depreciation of others who didn't have my gift, you know, that sort of thing. When you said factions, were you thinking specifically of chapter 1, I'm of Paul, I'm of Cephas, I'm of Apollos? Yeah, and I went to chapter 11 because faction is used there, but they were obviously divided on the basis of who had taught them or perhaps who had baptized them. Paul begins the epistle by talking about the fact that they were divided among themselves. So some quarreling going on, and if you needed evidence that there was quarreling, Paul gives it right here. He says that's what's happening among you. Okay, 1 Corinthians 3:3, but for you are still of the flesh, for while there is jealousy and strife. Now see there, they go to a different English word, even though it is the same Greek word. There's strife among you. Are you not of the flesh and behaving only in a human way? What is this verse saying? Well, strife is carnal. We would guess that from the work of the flesh. Paul says, you're still carnal. Even though these are Christians, they're not behaving in the way that Christians should behave. They're behaving in the way that the world would behave. 2 Corinthians 12:20 and 21 is a list of sins that we're going to see again and again. We've already seen it a couple times in our studies. For I fear that perhaps when I come, I may find you not as I wish, and that you may find me not as you wish, that perhaps there may be quarreling, jealousy, anger, hostility, slander, gossip, conceit, and disorder. Quarreling, strife. And look at some of the other words. Jealousy, anger, slander, gossip, conceit. Those are the kinds of things that contribute to strife. They are the motivations in many cases of strife. Some indeed preach Christ from envy, Paul writes to the Philippians, and rivalry, but others from goodwill. I've always thought that's an interesting statement by Paul, that people, some people were preaching the gospel, which is a good thing, but their motivation was it was a rivalry, and they may have been rivals of the Apostle Paul.
That one's not right, but I assume it's the same Greek word.
Yes. All of these are the same Greek word. Okay, sorry about not putting it red. 1 Timothy 6:4, dissension. Another English word for the same Greek word. So, not very consistent here in the ESV. He is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. Paul's talking about false teachers. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions. The word quarrels is in there, but that's not our word. That's a different word. The word that's our word, eris, is the word dissension. And that's confusing. It seems to me they need to be more consistent. I'll write them a letter. Titus 3:9, but avoid foolish controversy, genealogies, dissensions, the idea of strife and quarrels. Again, look at the two words. Dissensions is actually the word here that has is the translation of our Greek word. All right, so let's talk about the third word here. And once again, I've got my animation all messed up. Fits of anger. There's a single word there. It is the word thumos. And the Logos Sense Lexicon, as you can see, says fury, a feeling of intense anger. Bedag says anger, wrath, rage, indignation. Lonidas says wrath, fury, fury, wrath, and rage. I wanted to share with you a comment made by Vine. Sometimes Vine will make a comment in the context of a definition of a word that'll help you distinguish between words that are similar in their meaning. And that's what he does here. He says this word means a hot anger or wrath. And he notes, thumos, wrath, not translated anger, is to be distinguished from orge in this respect, that thumos indicates a more agitated condition of the feelings, an outburst of wrath. That's why it's translated in Galatians 5 as fits of anger or outbursts of wrath in various versions. An outburst of wrath from inward indignation, while orge suggests a more settled or abiding condition of mind, frequently with a view to taking revenge. So If we were to think about the difference between these words, we would say that thumos is the kind of hot anger that comes up quickly, but also tends to subside more quickly. Orge is this settled anger that sometimes turns into hatred or bitterness or malice because it's held, it's longer, even though it may not seem as intense initially. Orge, he says, is less sudden in its rise than thumos, but more lasting in its nature. Thumos describes the anger where someone just flies off the handle quickly. You know, there are people who it takes them something a while to get angry, but when they get angry, they hold it, and they stay angry for a long time. This word that we're talking about, thumos, is the idea of someone who flies off the handle. And maybe they will, in the moment, they'll say or do things quickly, but it doesn't last very long. Not an abiding type thing. You can probably see the difference then. Thumos expresses more the inward feeling, orge, the more active emotion. Thumos may issue in revenge, though it does not necessarily include it. It is characteristic that it quickly blazes up and quickly subsides, though that is not necessarily implied in each case. Whew! Thumos is not near as big a problem, right, than orge. Orge, you know, you hold it for a long time, you know, it turns into hatred and everything. Thumos, though, I mean, it blazes up and then subsides. The problem is what happens between those two points, right? I'm all agitated and upset, and in the moment of anger, that's the problem. That's where sinful behavior often accompanies this blazing anger. All right. See, I've got another thing here. Vine, he says, actually, this is in a different comment. He says, thumos is found 18 times in the New Testament, 10 of which are in the Apocalypse, Revelation, and 7 of which the reference is to the wrath of God. So in Romans 2:8, wrath and indignation, there's the two words together. The order in the King James Version is inaccurate. Elsewhere, everywhere else, the word thumos is used in a bad sense. And one of the things we're going to discover with the word that's translated jealousy in Galatians 5, the works of the flesh, it's the word zealous. Zealous can be used in a good sense, can be used in a bad sense. Depends on the context. Thumos is also a word that can be used in more than one way. It can be used in the sense of God's hot anger against sin, or it can be used to talk about man and his hot anger. What would be the difference? Is God getting away with something that we're condemned for? What do you think about that?
God is rightfully angry at our sin, whereas when we're talking about fits of anger, that's not rightfully. So I like when you taught on anger, I don't know, a few months ago, you brought up Jonah, and the question that was asked, you know, is it right for you to be angry?
Right. So the motivation is the difference, most likely, that God's anger is not selfish, it's not capricious. He's angry at injustice, at sin, and punishment comes from his anger, but it's just. Man's anger frequently is selfish. Anybody had something happen and then something else happened that was negative and then something else happened and you finally had enough and you just blow up? What is that kind of anger? Well, it's not righteous anger a lot of times. It's selfishness. Things aren't going my way. And so I express it in this outburst of anger. Did you have a question or comment?
I would also say that God's wrath is still under control. God's anger is always under control, but a lot of times our
good. A good distinction. I don't know your name.
Josh.
Josh is making a good distinction, and that is that God's anger is always controlled, and that's why it results in justice, whereas man's anger often is uncontrolled and results in sinful behavior. And I think that's the meaning or the connotation of thumos here in Galatians 5. It follows the word jealousies, which when smoldering in the heart, break out in wrath. So this thumos is often the expression of another problem, emotional problem. All right, so here are some of the other translations. Most of them are very similar. The ASV says wraths, but several of the translations maintain this idea of outburst. Something that's intense and rapid is kind of the idea. The King James Version just uses the word wrath, which is probably not very distinctive from other words, like the word orge. When they heard these things, all in the synagogue were filled with wrath. Okay, outburst of anger. You remember why? Josh? Yeah. He's reading from Isaiah in the synagogue, and he talks about them, and they are furious about this. In fact, so much so that what are they prepared to do? Murder him. Murder him. Nazareth was kind of perched on the edge of the plain there. There was a cliff, and we're pretty certain of where Jesus was probably conducted. He passed through their midst, the text says. But they were willing to kill Jesus because of what he had said. That's a wrath that comes up quickly. This wasn't something where, you know, for over a period of months they were, you know, contemplating what shall we do. That might be more the idea of Joseph's brothers. We'll say more about that later. So that's Luke 4:28, filled with wrath. When they heard this, they were enraged and were crying out, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." In the English, they've translated it as a verb. It is the noun that we're talking about, thumos, there, that is translated, they were enraged. They were filled with or full of wrath and were crying out, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." You maybe recall in Acts 19 that Paul has been teaching at Ephesus, and he is cutting into the idolatry trade. The silversmiths get together. They're losing business because Paul is convincing people that idolatry is the wrong way to go. And so they get this mob together, and they're upset, enraged. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians, Diana, some versions say. Romans 2:8. "But for those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, there will be wrath and fury," is thumos. And that's divine fury, right? In judgment. Controlled anger. 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 12, 20. Now we're talking about the word anger here in this list of sins. "That perhaps there may be quarreling, jealousy, anger, outbursts of wrath or anger." All right. Ephesians 4:31. "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger," so wrath and anger are two different things, "and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice." I said they're two different things. We use them pretty much as synonyms, but what we've seen is a distinction between those two Greek words that talk about anger, but a different kind of anger. Hopefully that was clear. Did I hear someone want to make a comment? Yeah, Alex?
Romans 2:8 has both words for it and thumos.
Yeah. Right. Colossians 3:8. "But now you must put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth." We're getting a sense maybe of some of the meaning of this word in some of these contexts. "By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king." This is speaking of Moses, obviously. "For he endured as seeing him who is invisible." You may recall that Moses killed an Egyptian in defense of one of his brethren, Israelite. And so he ends up fleeing Egypt because of the wrath of the king. But he wasn't afraid of him. I've listed Revelation there because those passages essentially all have the same kind of context and don't lend much to the meaning for us. All right, so let's talk a little bit about some of the illustrations that I suggested there in the lesson. And you may have come up with some other illustrations. I'll be glad to entertain those. But the first one I put there is Genesis 4, Cain. So what's the background of Cain? How does it relate to anger?
Killed his brother in a fit of anger.
Okay, he kills his brother in a fit of anger because his sacrifice is not accepted. Do you get the impression from the account there in Genesis 4 that there was a deep-seated anger that then flared when they're in the field together and Cain strikes his brother in the moment? Thumos, the idea would be that he was in a fit of anger. And that's the danger of this kind of anger, is that it's intense, and so people don't they disconnect their brains. You know, our lives are, there's a cycle that describes a lot of things that we do in our life. And it starts with an emotion, and that emotion then becomes the catalyst for action. The problem with some emotions or desires is that they disconnect the brain so that we do not reason about what our response is going to be. The response just becomes quick and sometimes without any kind of logical reasoning behind it. Anger is one of those things. You go into the Proverbs, and constantly the proverb writer is saying that the person who's soon angry, what's going to happen? Transgression, he says. Transgression. Got to be able to control your spirit. We'll say more about that in the discussion questions. So that's the background of Cain. Cain is angry, and his anger then results in the death of his brother. All right, 2 Chronicles 26. Do you remember the story of King Uzziah? He is king of the southern kingdom. He's called Azariah, I believe it is, in the Chronicles. And how is Uzziah the victim of intense anger? Anybody remember the circumstances?
He goes to offer incense. Well, he's not a priest, he's a king. He doesn't have that right. And so God strikes him with leprosy.
Okay, that's all true. He left out one big detail. The priest came and opposed him. This is not your job. I'm translating from the New Living Translation now. This is not your job. And he becomes angry, and God strikes him in the moment with leprosy. And the text is interesting. And he hurried himself out. He got the message. But his anger flared because he was opposed by the priest who had every business, every legitimate right to oppose him. As Alex said, he was a king from Judah. It was the priests who were supposed to be offering this worship in the temple. He had no business being there doing what he was doing. And so he becomes very angry. God strikes him with leprosy, which I think convinced him that the priests were right. Okay, the last thing here, the people of Nazareth, we looked at the passage. Let's go ahead and, well, I won't spend any more time on that because I want to get into the discussion questions. But Luke 4 talks about Jesus there in the synagogue at Nazareth, and he's critical of the people there. Remember, they are surprised at his claim that he is fulfilling this Old Testament messianic passage. Because what do they think about him? Did Jesus grow up in Nazareth, and everybody said, yeah, that's the Messiah. Yeah. We're pretty sure this is the Christ. No. They saw him as what? The carpenter's son. Yeah, this is Joseph's son. We know this guy. And it seemed arrogant to them, I'm sure, that he would claim to be the Christ, the Messiah, to fulfill this messianic passage. And then when Jesus criticizes them, then they get angry and they try to kill him. All right, does anybody want to add a story or an illustration? Yeah, David? Yeah, angry, and he tries to kill David with a spear. Would you say that was Thumos or Orge? Okay, probably a little bit of both. I think Orge may have set the scene, and then in a fit of anger, outburst of anger, he tries to kill David. That's a good example. Anything else? Anybody else? a righteous anger when Jesus cleanses the temple, which he does twice at the beginning of his ministry and then toward the end in the last week. Yeah, there's anger there. And such that he turns over the tables of the money changers, drives out both the animals and those who were selling them. How many of you have seen the movie Jesus Christ Superstar? I've talked about this before. Nobody has seen that movie. It's an old movie. Yeah, I know. It was not a talkie. Black and white. Okay, it's an old movie. Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical. And in that movie, Jesus is out of control. I mean, he is beating people and leaping around. That's not the picture I get. And it comes back to Josh's comment about God's anger is controlled. It's not the kind of anger that just expresses itself in whatever behavior happens to be, happens in the second, in the moment. Yes, Joe. Okay. So Joe's question is, what about situations where a lot of people are dying as a result of God's anger, and it seems like chaos? Do you think there was chaos when the Babylonians came in 586 and besieged the city of Jerusalem, tore down the temple, carried off people, burned the city? Was that chaos? I think the punishment that God brings as a result of his righteous anger often is manifested in chaos among the people. But that's not uncontrolled anger on God's part. That's the response of people to the anger of God, which is a righteous anger. You know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I think it's a good question, because sometimes God's anger might seem to us to be out of proportion to whatever infraction has occurred, right? Uzziah, for instance. You know, he goes into the temple, he's got some incense, he wants to burn some incense, and God strikes him. He's a leper for the rest of his life. His son Jotham takes over. Okay? I think I got that right. Jotham? Yeah. I was thinking Jotham or Joash, but I'm pretty sure it's Jotham. But here's the problem. I think sometimes our appreciation is the wrong word, but our estimate of the seriousness of sin is not the same as God's. And God sometimes, I think, emphasizes how serious something is, how important it is that man follows his instructions by the severity of the punishment. I think of Uzzah, who touches the ark. That's all he does. Good intention. God strikes him dead. Does the punishment seem excessive? Well, depends on how serious you think God is about his commandments. And our perception of sin is not like God's often. Yes, sir. You had a. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal your comment. But he's a perfect example, is he not, of a serious punishment that seems like a kind of a non-serious infraction. But the rule was nobody touches the ark. Nobody touches the ark. Okay. Raquel is bringing up Psalm 103, which is an historical psalm. And in it, God is described as being slow to anger. And he is slow to anger. He's patient. But at some point, you know, God's wrath is expressed. Well, we need to move along so we can get to some of these questions. Apart from their common listing in the works of the flesh, do you see any connection between these three sins? Yay? Nay? If it's no, we can just move along, right? Yeah, David, go ahead.
Lack of love.
Okay, a lack of love. I think that's true in all of these. Anything else? Yeah, Daniel? Right.
so well. Go to the coral, and maybe that's a little bit more outward expression, but too far on the
Okay, a blow up. So Daniel's saying there's connection, maybe a progression in these words, and that's what I see in those three words. Anger and enmity or hatred are emotions that drive behavior. Anger can lead to enmity. Anger can lead to hatred. But either enmity or anger can lead to strife. That outburst of anger can cause strife between people. All right, so second question here. What examples of hatred and strife in our world can you cite? Oh, my. How many slides do we have on this? Well, we could list all kinds. Internationally, there are conflicts all around the world, and they are often the result of hatred that in some cases is generational in its character or nature. But people are not born as haters, are they? Right? When a baby is born, you can tell this one's a hater. You look in their eyes and you can just see it. No, you can't, because we're not born haters. We learn hatred. We learn how to hate people, how to hate things. Is there a legitimate expression of hatred? Okay, hint, the answer is yes. Because we're to hate sin just like God does. But we learn to hate people. And Jesus said, don't even hate your enemies. Love your enemies. Hatred's not inherited, it is learned. You talk about the Jews and the Palestinians. Every new generation is just picking up the baton from the last generation. I've seen videos where in Palestinian schools, kids are taught to hate Israelis. I don't know, maybe Israelis do the same thing. But it just keeps continuing because people learned from others as children this hatred. Yes, David?
Road rage is another example of that.
Oh, my. I didn't even think about that. Where would that be? Which word are we talking about, road rage? Some of you are saying, road rage? What is that? I've never experienced that, right? Tumas, right? Somebody cuts you off and the agitation comes up quickly. How dare he? You know, be careful. People do stupid things in that moment of anger. Tumas, that's a very good example of it. Ethan?
Here's the thing in the match talking about your proper expressions of hatred. How do we draw the line, or how do we avoid the issues like, you know, you see the Pharisees fall into? They had, I guess, what started as a proper hatred, engaging in sinful lifestyles, but that it became something Jesus clearly identified as sinful.
And yeah.
The way they were, you know, treating these people, the way they, you know, refused to reach out and try to bring those people to repentance.
Mm-hmm. I would ask the question, is it proper for us to hate anyone? Is it? Now, the Bible talks about God hating certain people. And I think the implication is there that he hates their behavior and he associates them with that behavior. But if God says, Jesus says, love your enemy, I'd like to know who it is that you're authorized to hate.
Own people.
The devil. Yeah, if you're going to hate someone, hate the devil. If you give me just 30 seconds, I'd like to look at this next question. And I got to it if Alex hadn't made so many comments. The question, and I've already gone past it, I should have read it before we went on. When does a difference in opinion or judgment or interpretation of Scripture turn into quarreling? Ooh, that'd be helpful to know, right? Because we're going to have differences of opinion. In this class, I'm always right. But there'll be other occasions where people will differ in their understanding of Scripture, right? When does that turn into quarreling? Well, AI says, always go to Google, right? A quarrel is an angry, bitter, or heated argument or disagreement between people. Now, that's how quarrel is defined, the English word. But a difference in opinion doesn't have to result in anger or bitterness, does it? Doesn't have to be heated. Are we able to calmly discuss differences that we have with others without it turning into character assassination or anger, bitterness, malice, name-calling? I think that's how you tell the difference. You can have two people who are diametrically opposed in their views, but they can have a calm, reasoned discussion of their respective positions. And I don't call that quarreling. In fact, I think that's what we need to do. But the problem is so often we want to win. And so what happens is strife, not a discussion of differences. Well, I've hurt Alex's feelings. You see, he's fleeing the auditorium. Because I won, yeah. No. Let's not go there. All right, so we will, on Wednesday, continue into Lesson 5. Don't forget to pick up Lessons 5 and 6 if you are wanting the paper copies. If you ask for the digital copies, it is nestled in your digital mailbox already. You don't even have to seek it out.
Hey, Greg told you about Jefferson's Fisher, the next conversation, but that your discussion there is the essence of his book. It's like, don't, two of his main points are, don't get defensive. And he's like, take a deep breath. And he said, get curious about other persons.
Listen.
And his whole goal is so there's a next conversation. So there's not some void. What have you had of him?
Yeah, that's good.
Of anger.
That's
so
good. And you said this.
I wish one of y'all would latch on to this and do a class of communication like we're doing one on conflict.
So. Yeah, managing conflict.
I'm making a.
How much you want to bet communication is going to come up in that class pretty frequently?
Well, of course. But it deserves its own.
Well, own study. Yeah. Yeah.
James, well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that would be a good topic. It would be a good topic.
That's the thing with road rage. You can't. I guess I use all kinds of things. What's going on about that?
Yeah.
Fisher's present was just right. The person did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And train that to be our response.
See, I always know the answer. He's a moron.
Or the injustice of he's doing 65 when he ran around.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get, we're angry at seeing the injustice.
Yeah, yeah. I do better at that than I used to years ago. We practice the adage, it's better to have that person in front of me than behind me. Just for safety's sake. Slow down. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, tomorrow is 67. Really? Okay. Now, I'm going to say this, and this is not empty flattery, but I didn't think you were anywhere close to 65. You have aged well. Well, I've been gray for how many years now? I attribute that to being married to Demi, but she says that's not the cause. And I'm saying that because she's not here. Well, thank you. Thank you. Actually, she has planned a day out. I've got to work the first half of the day on some things. Well, but we're going to go and do... We're going to go do something special in the afternoon and evening. So, Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go. You're a good husband.
They're interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I got it. Good comment. Appreciate the comment.
My name's Chuck.
Oh, Chuck. I heard Josh. Huh? I'm sorry.
That's fine. No, we enjoyed the sermon.
So you wondered who Josh was, huh?
Yeah.
That was a good comment. And I think that's an important distinction. And I think that makes the difference.
And I also thought of Moses when he overreacted that one time. That kicked him out of going into college.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I always thought that was true. Yeah.
Talk about severity versus apparent.
No. But he was kind of taking credit for God's work there, yeah. And I think that's what did it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's something.
Who's teaching?
Alan.
Appreciate you guys coming and visiting with us.
All right.
We'll take that back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Leaf. How are you doing, buddy?
Ah, that was a big fist bump. Oh, don't hurt your hand.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
How about you?
Good.
You're five? Hey, guess what? Tomorrow is my birthday. I will be 67.
Wow.
Woo! That's old as dirt.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You're five.
I have 2 and 4 months.
Oh, okay. Can I scoop by you? Oh, I need to leave the mic. I felt like I was forgetting something. I couldn't figure out what it was.
All right.